the one thing I would say to people is you have to be able to have, you know, a track record and credibility to go out to investors to show, hey, what I'm pitching you is a reasonable product or is a good investment.
Hi, everybody. This is Jake Santvano, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six, and best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, I'm doing very good. You're on vacation today, huh, my friend?
You know, always making it happen over here in Charleston, trying to get through some audio issues, but we're going to do it today. So we got a very special guest today. Today's guest is the Chief Investment Officer for Reliant Real Estate Management. As CIO, he is responsible for overseeing the company's new acquisitions, and in the last 12 months, his team has invested in over $100 million in self-storage projects and raised over $50 million in equity. So without further ado, Chris Benson, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. How are you?
You're doing great.
Excellent.
Doing really good. Now, that is that's a lot of storage. It's a lot of people's stuff that you've just invested in. And before we get to your background and your story, how's the demand for self-storage? And I'm just curious if there's enough supply. I'm guessing there is because I see the revolving door, which is the Amazon man at my house every day. And we're constantly, you know, buying more stuff. So I think he's kind of like an extended family member now. I think my wife's putting a little addition, you know, on the house for him. But I don't think Americans are buying less stuff. So maybe dive into that before you get into your story.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, look, what I would say first off is you're 100% correct. Like American consumerism isn't changing, right? At least in the short term. I'm going to give you a quick story just because it just happened this weekend and it was such a stark contrast as to why our business works so well. So this past weekend, I was in upstate New York for a family reunion. And I grew up, my uncle had a dairy farm. And that's where the family reunion was in that same town. My uncle actually moved off the farm in the late 90s. So we actually went back to the farm, knocked on the door and talked to the people and said, hey, you know, can we walk around basically just be weirdos? Because we all had a lot of memories there. So me and two of my cousins. So we walked in the barn, right, where we used to milk cows. And it is just full of crap, just stuff, right? Cars, bikes. Just stuff that the guy has accumulated over 20 years. And I said to one of my cousins, you know, this is why the storage business exists. If there is space, people put stuff in it. And, you know, Jake, to your question, you know, from a demand side of things, let's just look back at the last 12 months. We've been super blessed that COVID has been a boon for the self-storage market, right? If you think of kind of self-storage demand as people use storage when they have transition in their lives, we call it the four D's of self-storage demand, right? Death, dislocation, downsizing, and divorce. If those four things are happening in your life, generally, you're going to consume self-storage. And fortunately for the asset class and us, you know, the pandemic has created a lot of all of those. And so with that, you know, we've had a fantastic last 12 months in the asset class. But generally, if things are changing in your life, you're consuming storage. To your question on the supply side, it's arguable, you know, if there's enough. There's been a huge development cycle in self-storage, right? You guys know this too. Anytime anybody makes money in real estate, we're really good at screwing it up by developing too much. So there's been a huge influx of supply over the last 5 years. COVID actually slowed things down just because, you know, it was very challenging to get permitting completed, supply chain disruptions, et cetera. So the amount of new deliveries in 2021 has actually gone down. 2022, at least the first half, we expect it to tail off and then it'll pick back up. But as you guys know, you know, in real estate, if people can make money, they're going to develop. So there's definitely been a large scale development cycle over the last few years in storage.
Let's get into your background, Chris. Before you got into self-storage full-time, what were you doing?
So my background's a little bit varied. So I started my career, Gino, in sales. I worked for, most recently, my last real job was a company called Intuitive Surgical. Do you guys know what the Da Vinci robot is?
Yes.
Familiar.
Yes. So I worked for them for almost 9 years. Selling the robot, did a number of things with them. And real estate was kind of always a side hustle. And Gino, I think I probably told you this story, but I distinctly remember waking up at about 30 and saying, I'm not doing this another 30 years. Like, you know, I was making great money, you know, all the kind of checkbox, are you successful? I had, but my work-life balance was awesome, was terrible. And, you know, the biggest thing that I knew was every year I started from zero, right? So every January 1, I made a lot of money last year. It doesn't mean I'm going to make anything this year. So, you know, I started, as many people do, kind of that passive income stream. How am I going to build it? And, you know, real estate made the most sense for me, and started with duplexes in the town that we lived in, and very quickly realized I wanted nothing to do with that. It just wasn't scalable. We had 22 units and I hated all of the people. And I hated pretty much everything having to do it. It wasn't like the maintenance part of it. It was more of the people issues. Like, we had kind of B minus type stuff and it was just soul sucking. There was just always problems. And I heard on a podcast, or I read it, I really don't know where I got the quote, but it was basically big deals and small deals are the same amount of work. You just make less money in small deals. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, I just have to scale. So we sold everything and we got into multifamily. We ended up building, long story short, building a 64 unit apartment complex. And that was kind of where the light bulbs went off for me, Gino, where I was like, this is how you make money in real estate. And then, you know, we did a number of projects over the years, specifically in multifamily. And then about 5 years ago, I said, cap rates can't compress anymore. I got to get into a different asset class. Obviously I was wrong. Cap rates have continued to compress over the last 5 years. So I started looking at other stuff. I'm a big data guy, and self-storage, you know, I can reference some of the data sets if you want to hear them, but historically has done really well, has had a fantastic resilience against recessions. And then more importantly for me, what I really liked about storage was the asset class is still very fragmented in the ownership. And you guys see this in the smaller multifamily world, right? You know, 15 years ago, multifamily was the same way. We have five publicly traded REITs in the space, and then the rest is very fragmented as far as ownership. More than 50% of the square footage in the United States is owned by operators who own less than five facilities. So there's a really nice consolidation opportunity to be had in the asset class. And look, just like every asset class, storage will consolidate to institutional capital. If you can make money in an asset class, institutional capital is going to find it. So it's just a matter of time. And, you know, the big will get bigger in self-storage as well.
You've laid out so much amazing information there, but there's one thing that stood out. You just said the last real job that I had. Your job isn't real right now. Is it a fake job or is it just like this amazing job? Because all of us entrepreneurs feel that way. The last job that I had, my restaurant was my last job. And on Jake and Gino, it's like this fun thing. So can you dive into that? Because that really touched me because it's so true. It's like we have this soul sucking hamster type of job where, like you said, you start in January and then all of a sudden, touch on that for me a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, look, for me, I think it's about building something, right? That's fun. Being a part of that growth and look, Reliant was started by two other guys, Todd Allen and Lou Pollock. And I'm just standing on the shoulders of what they've built right over the years. And I came in as a partner helping to basically pour gas on the fire that they got lit. And so, you know, for me, Gino, like, that's fun. Like, I enjoy the building and, you know, the problem solving that goes along with entrepreneurial. And I'm probably working more now than I did before, but It's enjoyable. You know, we relocated our family from New York to Georgia to kind of be a part of that growth and, you know, was happy to do it. So I understand what you're saying. And not that this isn't a job, but it feels different. That part's for sure.
It's a calling. And everybody who's listening, I don't want Chris to discount pouring gas on the fire, because that's such an important part. There's an inflection point in most people's careers where the company started and it's going and it's hit a certain phase and it needs to get to that next level. Well, Chris was there to pour that, you know, the gasoline on the fire. And if you're out there, you have 30, 40 units, you need to look for a Chris to help you ignite it. You've started it. It's ready to go. Sometimes to take it to that next level, you need somebody out there from coming from with outside the organization to help you pour that gasoline. What did you think you specifically did? What type of gasoline, what steps did you take to help your company take it to the next level?
It's skill set, Gino, right? Like there are in any business, there are things that people do really well, mm-hmm. and there are things that they don't do well, but need to do well if they're going to continue to scale. Mm-hmm. And for us at Reliant, kind of the commingling of talents was, you know, Todd Allen, who's managing principal, it's his baby. The company is his baby. He started it. He's built it. He's done the hard work. You know, he is great at operations, loves it, loves operations. I'm the exact opposite. I hate operations. You know, I like to look at P&Ls, but like, I'm not interested in the minutia. You know, I love to think at kind of that 30,000 foot view. And so, you know, for Todd, the big piece that I brought to from a skill set perspective is, you know, building out that capital raising platform. For him, he's a deal junkie, loves the deals, loves to operate. And raising capital was always a problem. Like, it was just another thing that he had to do, and was always like, oh, we're going to buy this deal. Oh yeah, I got to go raise 10 million bucks or, you know, whatever the dollar amount was. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I had experience with that. And that's kind of where the confluence of skill sets came together. And, you know, Todd was happy to say, yeah, I want nothing to do with that. You know, I want to continue to do what I do, which is chase deals, love to be part of the acquisitions process. But I want nothing to do. I just want to know there's money there when we're ready to buy. And so, you know, for me, coming from a sales background, Gino, it just fits, right? I've just always, that's been a world I've always lived in. I've had a lot of experience raising money over the years. And so it was a good marriage.
How was it when you left from the duplexes, from that small multi, getting into self-storage? What did your wife say? What did your family say? What was your gut telling you?
Well, so I still have that 64 unit. It's in upstate New York. It's crushing it, by the way, as is pretty much everything having to do with real estate right now. So let me take a step back. My wife is super gracious and risk tolerant. I've always sort of been like, we can always make more money. You know, like if everything goes down the tubes today, I could always go get a job. Like, you know, we're probably not going to live in a van under a bridge somewhere. But you know, I think she's been very tolerant of me, you know, as I've looked at opportunities. And, you know, I think the thing for me, Gino, and I try to do this with my kids too, is look, just be opportunistic. Like, there will be things that if you're out there doing stuff, you're going to get opportunities put in front of you, and you just have to be willing to jump. And it's not always easy, right? You know, the job that I walked away from at Intuitive, people would die for. It was unbelievable company, unbelievable technology, you know, making a bunch of money. Like, it was a great deal, but it just wasn't leading to what I wanted. And I think, you know, being willing to step out. I mean, Gino, you guys know this. Right now, there are listeners on your podcast who are listening to every real estate podcast on the planet, reading every book and doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's just that analysis paralysis where eventually, you know, if you're going to learn, you got to get in it. You got to do something. And, mm-hmm. and I think for me and my kids, like, that's been a big thing, is just be willing to see an opportunity and then take a step. And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but, you know, the opportunity to do that, I think is a huge part of, you know, that growth trajectory.
Chris, do you mind if I share a quick story about me and Jake discussing that same topic?
Sure.
I was outside the other day walking, and he's getting his tires changed at a Haviland station. And we're just complaining about the employees, about the whole situation. And Jake just turns to me, and I have the same exact thought. He says, all we have to teach our children today is mindset and to buy assets. That's all they need to learn. Everything else is superfluous, because if you have the growth mindset that you're exhibiting, opportunities, they're there. Most people look at problems. Most people are victims. I don't want my children to live in that realm. Because we do have crap working with us. I do get a crappy hand dealt. We do get hit with hurricanes, but it happens to everybody. How we respond to that is everything in life. And if we are the role models, Jake and myself and you, for our children, they will know how to respond, to have that growth mindset, to figure it out. Stuff's always going to happen to us, but how do you figure it out? And just buy assets, because assets are going to continue to go up.
It was mindset, develop a skill, and then buy assets. So, you know, Chris has the sales ability. I'm sure he can underwrite. He has those skills, mm-hmm. but he has the right mindset. He developed the skills and he buys assets. And I want to, you know, unpack this a little more. So I wanted a tire rotation. We're down here in Charleston right now. I said, let's get the tires rotated. They said, well, this is a six lug and it's a team lift. And because of COVID, we can't rotate your tires. Meanwhile, nobody in the shop has a mask on. They're all rubbing elbows, throwing high fives. And I'm just thinking to myself, this is idiotic. And sometimes the bureaucracy needs to get out of the way because there is no safety, you know, among the germs being floated around on everyone right now. Okay, guys, just change the bleeping tires, rotate them, please. But it didn't.
And that's what that it was. My frustration was coming. You're right. I forgot the skill set. And that just goes without saying. You have to be able to provide value. Like Chris provided a tremendous amount of value. He provided the gasoline, the capital raising for the venture going forward. So remember that, everybody. Mindset, skills, and buy assets out there. Chris, let me ask you
this. It's like Tony Robbins with you two. I'm fired up. I think if we get a little bit of all of those. And Gio, let me just throw one more thing just before you. Like, it's interesting to hear people talk about the reasons why not, right? And Todd, I don't know if it's his quote, but he says it all the time. There's always 1,000 reasons not to do a deal. Mm-hmm. Always. And, you know, I think what's interesting is as you hear kind of the conversation pitch from or change from, well, it was COVID pandemic, we shouldn't be doing anything, to now, all right, well, we've got to worry about inflation. There's always something where people can point to and be like, well, that's why I can't do this now. You know, and my opinion is, you know, 1031 exchanges may go away, right? Biden's trying to get rid of 1031 exchanges in the new tax plan. There's still going to be opportunities. There's going to be some tax efficient way to transfer your wealth from one real estate project to another, you know, inflation, right? Everybody's concerned about it. There's still going to be opportunities in the space. And I think it's interesting, like people get hung up on whatever the thing is now that the problem is, there's always going to be, there's never going to be that time where it's, you know, sunshine and bluebirds unless you make it. Mm-hmm. So I 100% agree with you.
And there may be opportunities for buying though, with, you know, if you know, you're seeing 1031 going away and then there's higher capital gains, you may see a rush at the end of this year if these things do move for people selling because they don't want to pay. So there may be an opportunity of buying at the end of this year. So yeah, I totally agree.
And Chris, to your point, I challenge everybody out there, go pick up a book in real estate written back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. The theme is all throughout, especially residential homes. I don't have enough for the down payment. People are buying homes for $25,000 or $30,000. Their down payment was $2,000. They couldn't find the money for the down payment. So there's always the problem. Like Chris is talking, you can always find a problem. Taxes were too high back then. There weren't enough jobs, blah, blah, blah. The mortgage rates were really high. There's always issues going on within the certain part of whatever market cycle you're in. Look for those opportunities. And that's where mindset really comes in. The growth mindset doesn't look for those problems. It looks for solutions. And that's one of Jake's big things that he talks about in the Rand family of companies. If you're going to bring a problem to us, at least bring the solution along with it. Figure out what we can do to solve this problem because the problem is there. How do we work collectively to get that done? So
I got one more thing for your three. So we had skill set, mindset, and buy assets. I'm giving you a fourth. The fourth is wait. Be patient. So I have a quote. I'm not going to turn my camera around because all hell will break loose and everything. The whole thing will break down. But it's from Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett's partner. And it says, the big money is not in the buying and selling, but in the waiting. Mm-hmm. And when you see really wealthy people, they never sell anything, right? I mean, Gino, you just talk about book from the 60s. Almost everything's a good deal in 20 years, right? You just got to wait for it. And I think that's the other mindset of, look, you got to look at this long term. The compounding effect is incredibly powerful. So sorry, we'll get off that topic.
No, not at all. You got to keep beating the drum because we actually partnered up with a gentleman who created a 100-year real estate investor brand. You think about 100 years, Chris, whatever you're doing right now is affecting your kids and your grandkids. You're creating legacy wealth. You're creating an amazing brand. We talked to Sam Freshman about a year and a half ago. Sam Freshman's two biggest mistakes, Jake, what were they? Not buying enough and selling. And he's in his 80s and he's been syndicating. So to your point, it's that shiny object syndrome. It's the ability to say, hey, I've talked to so many high-level entrepreneurs, but all they're looking at is their next rip, the next transaction, the next sale. They're not looking to continue to grow the brand. And maybe if you're not that person who likes operations, Chris doesn't like operations, but he's partnered with somebody who does. So maybe you go out there and find somebody who has that skill set. You have a skill set. You like to pull the trigger. Maybe the both of you get together and continue to adopt that 100-year mindset, that long-term growth, figuring out how to be your 100% responsibility junkie and figure out how to hold these assets long-term. I always think of the farmer analogy. You got to plant that seed and water it, and it's got to continue to work itself out. So I agree with you 150% on that one. I love this conversation. We're not even asking questions.
You got to manage debt, right, Gino? You can hold it for the long term. You need to learn how to manage your debt. I think that's key. So
yeah. So Chris, your background is in sales. You have a couple of tips for the listeners out there to start raising capital, because we've had a lot of Jake and Gino students in the academy raise millions of dollars of capital. And there's a couple of really, you know, you look at their characteristics. Wow, this person can raise capital. What would you tell his listeners? What kind of skill set do you need to raise capital? And what do you do when you're raising capital?
Well, I mean, and look, this is just me. I'm not saying this is applicable to everyone, but if you came to me with a deal, the first thing I'm going to ask is track record, right? So I'm a huge believer, and I've invested a lot passively as well. And what I look at is, number one, the people, right? Bet on the jockey, not the horse, right? Who are the people? Because that's who you're getting married to. And do you believe that they're going to make good decisions for you during the whole period? And then second is track record, right? If you're telling me you're going to, you know, give me a 1.8 multiple on your storage project, well, what have you done historically? And for people just starting out, that's a challenge, right? Where they may not have that experience. And I think, you know, that's where partnering with people along the way is critical, so that they can learn and build that track record. For me, you know, what organically happened was, because I was doing real estate on my own, people just organically started asking, like, hey, on the next deal, would you be interested in taking an investor? And, you know, after I figured out how it worked, I said, okay, yeah, I'd be happy to do that. And then that just kind of, you know, snowballed Gino as it got bigger. But, you know, the one thing I would say to people is, you have to be able to have, you know, a track record and credibility to go out to investors to show, hey, what I'm pitching you is a reasonable product, or is a good investment. And, you know, this world, I mean, in the world of syndication, the barrier to entry is very low. Yes. If you hang a shingle outside your door that says you are a syndicator, and someone will give you money, you are a syndicator. And so, you know, you just have to be thoughtful. If you're an investor out there, you know, dig into the people, dig into the track record. You know, for me, with Reliant specifically, you know, I came to an organization that had a track record, and that's what I loved the most, right? They had built the model. They just needed help in, you know, building out a specific part of their business. So, you know, Gino, I think one thing is, if we kind of tie back to something specific for your students, it would be, you know, build that track record and credibility before you're going out to investors.
How was that first raise that you did, whether it was multifamily or self-storage? Were you crapping your pants?
For me, no, because it was, people kept asking and I had done my own, right? Okay. So like, eventually I was just at a point where I couldn't use my own money anymore. And so I had a list of people who are ready. And look, part of it is just, it's that trust, right? Mm-hmm. People are investing in you, right? They're not investing in the deal, because most of the time, especially if they're new to real estate syndication, they have no idea what they're investing in, mm-hmm. but they're trusting Gino, right? They know Gino's had a successful run, or, you know, previously he's had a successful career, and they're trusting if you're bringing this to them, it's a good opportunity. And don't take that lightly. Right? That is a big responsibility, where, you know, I think of people's money as their time, right? The only thing we can't replace in life is time, right? Doesn't matter how much money you have, you can't get more of it. So people have spent their time to make the money that they're willing to go invest with you. And so you got to be really thoughtful when that responsibility of you placing someone's money, what you're placing it into. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, there's, like I said, there's just a lot of people who are just flippantly putting deals out. Some are good, some are not so good. And I know you guys have seen those too, multifamily storage, it doesn't matter. It's the barrier to entry is low. So, I think you just need to take that responsibility and internalize it before you take somebody's money.
I love that. Three questions that we ask. I've got the little multifamily booklet that we wrote is, can you help me? That's the first thing. Can you help the person that you're trying to raise capital from? You? Can they trust you? Obviously, Chris has harped upon that. You need to build that trust, and that you care about the person. Are you going to be a financial steward? Or are you just going to be take their money and just place it anywhere, and all you're looking for is fees? If you can answer all three of those questions to a potential investor, that investor will invest with you. So I love that advice. Chris, we had talked about a month or so ago about the value in self-storage. Where are you finding value? And I remember one thing you said to me, those secondary and tertiary markets, that's where you're looking for value. And it appears multifamily is the same way. Sometimes investors are out there are chasing higher cap rates. That may be more risky because you're going out into markets that may be less desirable. Where do you see the value in self-storage right now?
Yeah. So for us specifically, I'll start with the market piece. Gino, I would say we're leaning even more into tertiary markets than we were 12 months ago. And here's the reason, right? If we buy a facility in Tampa, right, or insert strong secondary market here, Charlotte, you know, Dallas, there is going to be institutional capital all around you. Your competitive set are all going to be institutional players, whether it be the REITs or other large regional operators like us. But that's who your competition is going to be. And in those environments, it's follow the leader, right? The REITs are going to adjust pricing daily and you're going to follow suit. And if you don't, you don't rent units. Mm-hmm. There's not really much to do there. Mm-hmm. You know, in a tertiary market, what we focus on is value add deals in tertiary markets. So if we, the perfect deal for us is a deal mom and pop operated, right? Somebody who has maybe one, two facilities, they've left a lot of low hanging fruit on the vine. And there's a potential for expansion and maybe they don't have the capital to do it. Right. So, you know, we'll buy a deal in, we bought a deal in Midland, North Carolina. It's 16 miles outside of Charlotte. Right. So we hope it's in the path of progress as Charlotte continues to expand. The guy ran it from his house. So there was nobody in the office. So if you showed up at the storage facility, you had to call a number and, you know, he would meet you there. So there's definitely some low hanging fruit there. They don't do anything as far as tenant insurance, U-Haul truck rentals, because all of those are labor intensive and they had no retail sales. So you have all these ancillary incomes you can immediately impact and we can build 20,000 square feet of additional climate and the facility is full today. So even with all of that, what we would call mismanagement, and I don't mean that negatively or under management is probably a better way to put it.
Opportunity.
And there's a lot of opportunity moving forward. So for us, Gino, we look at that and say, okay, not too dissimilar than probably what you guys see in the smaller multifamily arena. You know, it's undermanaged. There's low hanging fruit and an opportunity for expansion. That's the sweet spot for us. And that's where we think the yield's going to be over the next 5 years, because just like multifamily or any other asset class you're looking at, there's so much capital chasing deals right now. Everything is values are high. So it's hard to uncover yield. And so for us, tertiary market, value add deal, that's really the sweet spot for us and our investors.
Last long answer question. Where are you guys finding the deals? Are they off market deals? Are they with brokers?
That's the right answer, Jake. So we have a couple things working for us. Is one, we do 10 to 12 deals a year. So our volume's pretty high in the self-storage space. So we have a lot of relationships with brokers. So they know that, you know, one, we have a great reputation of underwriting the deal before we submit an offer. We don't retrade. There's been one in the last 4 years that I'm aware of. And it was because we found a major environmental issue in our due diligence process. So our reputation with the brokers is very, very strong. So we get a lot of, you know, listed deals or limited look deals where the broker says, hey, I'm going to bring this to three groups. You're one of them. We have a few people who are out identifying off-market deals for us. And then, you know, they get paid a fee if we end up transacting the deal. And then the third thing is, you know, Todd and Lou have been in the industry a long time. And so we have a lot of owner relationships direct where, you know, Todd will call someone and say, hey, we're in this market. Would you be interested in selling? And sometimes it's a direct owner to owner relationship. So the answer is right now we'll underwrite, we'll look at almost anything. You know, whether or not it's a good fit for us, you know, we have a few metrics that hopefully help us filter, but in the environment we're in, we got to turn over a lot of rocks to get to the yield requirements that our investors are going to require.
Mm-hmm. You're mentioning investing as an LP before. How long do you typically vet a sponsor, or do you just go with larger, more established groups when you're placing your capital?
Me personally, Jake?
You personally, yeah.
It's usually a people thing. You know, what I always start with, and it depends the asset class and how much I think I'm going to deploy with them. But you know, usually I'll go meet the team. That's how I met Reliant, right? I was an investor first and then, kind of the relationship blossomed from there, I guess, but usually I'm going to go meet the team, and try to understand who they are. Google and background checks are no brainers for me. You know, if the team is not willing to submit to a background check, then that's a pass. And then, you know, digging into their track record and talking with references is again, are the key things. And, you know, from an underwriting standpoint, I know enough to be dangerous. I can look at, you know, most pro formas and understand generally where the risk is. But it wasn't always that way. You know, I learned that over the years. So for me, I've always spent a lot of time on the front end, Jake, you know, vetting the people and the track record to understand, all right, you know, if you say this is going to happen 5 years from now, show me what you've done 5 years previous. You know, the past is usually the best indicator of what's going to happen in the future. So that's usually what I'm betting on.
Cool. All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
All right, we're back. So best personal habit for success.
A good one. For me, and this is, this again is me, everybody's got their own thing. It's probably working out. I've tried meditation and journaling and it's just not, it hasn't.
Even iron, brother.
It hasn't impacted me the way that it has everyone else. But for me, that's kind of my moment of the day that, you know, your head is clear and you have one purpose. And, you know, the discipline piece and just how I feel after is for me probably what has contributed the most to, you know, my overall work habits.
What about a tip for someone scaling up? Maybe they've done a deal. Maybe they were like you with 64 units. What's a great tip for someone looking to scale and get to that next level?
Partner, find the people who do things that you don't do well or that you don't want to do, right?
Complementary skill sets. Yes.
Yeah. For me, Jake, it was things I didn't like. I always tried to find people, the things I hated doing that I could find somebody else who loved doing that. And I just want to do the stuff that I want to do, right? It's back to the, you only have so much time in your life. So let's spend it doing things that you enjoy doing. So I would say finding that partner is critical. And then also, if it is something you enjoy doing, understanding when the time is right to bring someone else to allow you to scale, right? You can only do so much with the same number of hours everybody has in the day, but you start multiplying that by bringing in additional people to do what you do well. That's where you have that, you know, that the multiplying effect.
And Jake and Chris, that is the most difficult piece for the entrepreneur, to be able to bring somebody else on. And we got a great tip about a month or so ago, Jake and I. If you're going to bring somebody on, if they're going to cost you, let's say $100,000 a year, you break it down into monthly. And let's say that's going to cost you 10 grand a month. You look at it for 3 months, that's really going to cost you $30,000, because at the end of 3 months, you're going to reevaluate. And if you haven't gotten a return on that $30,000, you made a $30,000 mistake. But for the most part, you're probably going to get a 5X return on that. And that's just the reality, because you're going to recapture time. You're going to be looking, underwriting more deals. You're going to be speaking to more investors. You're going to be doing more high-level tasks by hiring that person. So I challenge everybody out there, if you're thinking about hiring somebody, you're way past it. As Jake would say, you already needed to hire that person. So put them on a 3-month trial. Put that in your mind. Don't worry about that big number at the end of the year. Break it down monthly and then reevaluate every month. Have expectations, have the KPIs of what you want that person to hit. And then at the end of 3 months, if it hasn't worked out, well, then there you can let that person go. But that's the fear. And it's held Jake and myself back. I remember the first time Jake mentioned about getting an HR person. I'm like, what is this guy, nuts? HR, we could do it ourselves. And I will tell you, everybody, what a godsend that was. I mean, my last two employees with Jake and Gino, amazing. I didn't have to be on 35 different interviews, wasting my time, soul sucking to find the right person. The core values, I mean, we got the core values. The person showed up. Big shout out to Mackenzie and John, got on. I knew right away for some reason. I'm like, they did all the work. I'm just here saying, yeah, you guys chose the right person. So for everybody out there, I'm telling you, I don't want to harp on this again, but that is the hardest part. If you're thinking about hiring somebody, do yourself a favor. Make it happen and then reevaluate after 3 months. And if it doesn't work out, you can always say no, but I will almost promise you that it will work out for you.
Yeah. And you have learned things over that 3 months and you'll have gotten better. Even if it wasn't a perfect fit, there's always growth that takes place in that zone.
Mm-hmm.
Any book recommendations, anything that's added value to your life recently that you want to throw out there?
I just read Tuesdays with Maury for the second time. You guys read that?
No. Hmm.
Oh, really?
We're talking about Maury Povich?
Mitch Albom, the sports writer.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know Mitch.
This book, I think, was in the late 90s, maybe early 2000s. It's the story of him reuniting with his college professor who has ALS. Mm-hmm. And basically he goes there every Tuesday and the college professor teaches him what's important in life. And then eventually he passes away. It's a tearjerker for sure. I've read it, I don't know, probably 10, 15 years ago, and it's on one of our shelves in our bedroom. And I just read it again. And it's a good perspective builder for sure. Mm-hmm. That's just the one that's top of mind. The other one that I'll give you that I love personally, probably in my top five all time, is The Alchemist. Ever read that by Paulo Coelho?
Yeah,
never read that. No.
Yeah.
Put that one on your list too, Gino, or Audible, or however you. It's basically the story of, you know, following your dreams and, you know, the trials and tribulations along the way and what that leads to. It's a good one.
It's a woo version of Think and Grow Rich. Okay. It was the beginning of this stuff, but in a more of like a philosophical standpoint. So it's cool. What project are you excited about right now?
So we're in the midst of there's 35 properties ish in our portfolio that are stabilized, and we're trying to build a methodology where we don't have to sell them. We've sold 38 properties in our history.
Ooh, I want to hear about this. Tell me about it.
Six. Well, two things, Jake. We're evaluating potential bringing a large institutional capital who will come in with core money, right, and just take it from the value add prop, you know, bucket of capital and move it to the core bucket. And, you know, for us, being able to continue to property manage those facilities for another 7 to 10 years is hugely valuable. How we look at the world in self-storage is the big play, the big monetization event is the consolidation strategy. Mm-hmm. The ability to take 150 or 200 property portfolio to the market at some point in the future. And maybe it's, you know, we take the company public or it's a private REIT or we sell the whole thing. There aren't very many of those. There is much more capital chasing those size transactions than there are those size transactions. So for us selling every 5 years, right? And we've done it too, Jake, right? We've sold 38 properties and our average hold time is 3.6 years.
Oh.
And unfortunately, that's just part of our learning curve, right? And it's part of growing the business. And now we're looking at it saying, okay, we're going to try not to do that anymore. So for our value add investors who are expecting a turn on their money, you know, this big institutional partner gives them that, right? We're essentially selling it to the value, to that big institutional partner with the potential of keeping it in our portfolio for an indefinite period of time. We also looked at Jake building our own evergreen fund where we're raising our own capital and it's just pure cash flow, right? It's a coupon clipper. There's not that big pop, but you know, as an inflation hedge, We're probably not there yet where we have the scale to raise enough capital to do the number of properties we have. But that's certainly in the back of our mind too. So before the end of 2021, something like that, we'll move forward on something. And right now we're kind of, you know, we're in the dating phase and looking at term sheets and trying to understand in the marketplace what we can actually get.
So just because I love this stuff. If you continue doing what you're doing, you didn't sell these properties, you keep adding and adding and adding. The cash flow is going to be so great over time. And the longer you hang in there, you know, I think that you're looking at it saying, we're going to get so big and then someday we'll sell it all. You're not going to need any more money. You got this big behemoth and you just cash flow and you get that snowball. Is there a refi play with the current portfolio where over time you can refi, get a little bit of capital back for the folks and hold on to these and take more of that long-term approach and really partner with these folks down the road? Because that would be beautiful. I mean, you really get a monstrous cash flow snowball over time.
Yeah, I think when we talk about that recap event, the recap event could be a recap and a refi or just a refi. The downside to the refi, as you guys know, is when you have, and 99% of our capital is retail money, right? You know, 100 grand at a time kind of money. We're not crystallizing our promote, right?
That's the problem with syndication, guys. This hurts. So I would say Gina and I have done 3 syndications out of the 20 some, properties that we have. Everything else we've bought in-house and we've refied and then we've held it and rolled with it. And it's literally the biggest issue that I have with syndications because it forces so much more work. You got to buy it and sell it in order as the sponsor to really get paid. And that's what drives me nuts about it. And that's why I love what I call our in-house deals. And we just buy them because all that hard work eventually ends up in a refi. We get paid back and then the cash flow continues on forever. And that is my favorite strategy. It's what I love to do more than anything. It's not that I don't love having investors and working with them. It's just an alignment of interest. There's that rub there, which we're trying to find ways to get around doing that and creating more direct partnerships where it's not so dependent on that promote on the back end and restructuring the way a Jake and Gino syndication looks like. Because to me, that's a conflict. When we have a deal right now, I don't want to sell it, but there's so much, to your point, pent up liquidity there that if we just refi it as sponsored, you're not going to be able to touch it. So it's a challenging dynamic there.
I think, and you bring up a great point, Jake. For us, this transaction will be $500 million or more. I mean, it's a big boy transaction, right? And so, if we recap, there's a substantial amount of liquidity you pull out of that continues to allow you to dump back into the value add start of our business, right? Mm-hmm. Think of us almost putting like 2 separate buckets of capital. Right, the value add capital that's what we do every day, right? We're buying value add deals. When they reach stabilization, we're just trying to put them into a second bucket. And so for us, the ability to create that liquidity event with a recap versus a refi, that liquidity event allows us to put it back into the value add bucket. Now, if we refi, we'll get a certain portion of that equity back as well, just like our investors would, but certainly not creating the liquidity event that
because when you really look at it, it's a big difference there. So what is the best way for folks to get a hold of you if they want to partner, find out more, etc.?
Yeah, for sure. So our website, reliant-mgmt.com or reliantinvestments.com. We're also on LinkedIn. If you look for me on LinkedIn, we post a fair amount of stuff on there. That's probably the best bet. And then if someone wants to get in touch with me directly, you can direct message me through the website or LinkedIn, and you'll get to me or one of the members on the team. Happy to have a discussion with you.
Very cool. Gino, recap us.
Jake, one morning, young Chris Benson gets up. It's January 2nd. He stretches and he says to himself, man, I love my life. I've got a great job, great wife. Everything's going good, but I haven't made any money this year. The year is just starting. I made a bunch of money last year, but nothing is really decided upon this year. And I have this passion, this burning desire to build things. I've got this great skill set, love my job, but I just want more. And I got this crazy idea of getting into multifamily and buying duplexes. I've got 22 units and these residents are driving me nuts. I hate the operations side. Let me go and build a 64 unit. I do that. And by the way, it's still crushing and I love that. But still, I don't like these operations. one day I meet Reliant Capital, love the company, love what they're doing. They've got a nice little fire burning here. And you know what? I've got some gasoline. If I could just put some gasoline on that fire burn and let it grow, it's really hard to get that fire started. It really is. I'm amazed. My two partners that are there, they did an amazing job, but they want to go to the next level and they're stuck. They have a problem. They're not really that great at raising capital. They're amazing at operating the properties. They're amazing at finding the value-add deals. They're deal junkies. But I've got this amazing skill set, and I love to raise capital, and I love to talk to people, and I love sales, and I want to build. So it's almost like a marriage made in heaven. Pull out my little gas can, pour it on the fire, and then all of a sudden, I've got this raging inferno, and I'm still building deals, and still buying deals. And in the process, I move from New York down to Georgia, and I want to really continue to build this company that we have here. And I've got these great aspirations and these great dreams. And, you know, I think something that's missed throughout the podcast is that Chris is an amazing learner. He's got that growth mindset. He's an amazing steward of his investors' capital, which is what we really need to focus on. It's not just doing any kind of deal, doing great deals. And they've pivoted from maybe primary markets into secondary and tertiary markets. And they're looking at other deals, looking at mom and pops, and they've got a vision. They probably have a nice, really vivid vision, as Cameron Harrell likes to talk about it, their vision board of where they're going to be 3 years from now. And we all need that. And it's been a testament to have Chris on the podcast. It's been an amazing show. I don't know if we were actually asking questions. We were really more conversational than anything else, but I hope you all got a tremendous amount of value out of it, because I did. And, you know, continued success to Chris and Reliant, and just go out there and just make it happen every day. Don't make those excuses. Find those problems and come up with solutions and look at them as opportunities. So thanks.
You didn't even need me on the podcast, Jake. You could have just had Gino kind of do that and we would have saved 56
minutes.
He wins
every time.
Dude, I got to take notes. I am not that smart, bro. I just, like, I'm writing everything down. I forgot the 4 D's. I really got to talk about the 4 D's, because this is important. Death, dislocation, downsizing, and divorce. I mean, that's really important self-storage, everybody. That's why the self-storage market is cranking. I'm in Florida. I don't have a basement, so I technically need self-storage. I just told my wife, we ain't buying any more crap. Any more crap is going to the dumpster. There's no self-storage for the Barbro family.
My man. Yes.
No self-storage for me, bro. 6 kids, no self-storage, no basement. So it's a testament to just cleaning up and not worrying about that stuff, bro.
So I will touch on this a little bit further. I, even though Mr. Amazon basically has a guest suite within our home, I do have something called an Amazon fire pit. It's not a fire stick. It's a huge pit on the side of my house where we burn all the boxes. And if I can slip in a few pieces of junk here and there, I get those in there too. So we got the Amazon fire pit. And I want to just give a shout out. Gina, we just got done reading The War of Art from Stephen Pressfield. And he talks so much about meeting that resistance in your life. And it just reminded me of everything that Chris is talking about, those challenges. Hit them head on, you know, meet the resistance and do your thing. So guys, really enjoyed it. Chris, thanks so much for your time today. And Gino, as always, great job. We'll see you guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.